thank you for downloading this podcast from Guymyr Baptist Church. You can find out more about our church at our website, guymyrbaptist.org.au. May God speak to you as you listen.
Thank you, Sue. Good morning. It's good to have you here this morning. Some people ask, why don't we have just one service for all of January? Look around. It's already full. That's why we don't do it more than 1 week, which is too bad because it was lovely to wake up a little bit later and get to church, I have to say. It's good to be here. I trust that you take the opportunity as well because this is one of those few times when we have both of our morning congregations together. So do not go up to people this morning of all mornings and say, are you new here? Because chances are they've been here for 35 years, they just attend a different service to you. So you're going to have to come with something different a little bit, something like, I haven't met you before. And perhaps they're visiting, but perhaps they just come to the other service. So do take advantage of that this morning as well. Well, as Mark said, this is a series entitled Jesus and the Sydney Morning Herald, when we seek to reflect from a Christian perspective on contemporary events, contemporary issues, and contemporary topics. The reason why we do this is a couple reasons. One, as followers of Jesus, of course, we follow Jesus in contemporary culture, don't we? We're not called to just kind of live in some sort of Christian ghetto and never engage with anything in the world. And so it's a fairly significant thing for us to know how we should follow Jesus in the midst of contemporary events and things that take place in the world, the things that people are talking about. How do we respond as Christians? So part of this is about discipleship. But also, if we are to participate in the plans and purposes of God to renew and restore all things in Christ Jesus, then we also need to be able to figure out which bits need to be restored, which bits need to be renewed, and which bits we can affirm within our culture and say, this is a good thing. This is something that is valuable and that we, as followers of Jesus, can also affirm as well. And so what we want to be doing over the Sundays in January is reflecting on some of these things that kind of pop up in the newspapers, the things that we're talking about over the course of this month. And this morning I want to talk, as Mark mentioned, about the Danish word hygge. Spelled H-Y-G-G-E, if you're wondering how you spell that, and I don't know why it's pronounced that way, it just is. And I stumbled upon this because of the Oxford and Collins Dictionary's Word of the Year. Don't know if you follow the Word of the Year, it's kind of at the end of the year, they kind of say this is one of the words that they're adding to the dictionary. So for the Oxford Dictionaries, it was post-truth, which we'll actually be talking about next week for a completely different reason. The Collins Dictionary, their Word of the Year was Brexit. But if you go to their websites, they actually have kind of the short list of some of the other words that are kind of being added to the dictionary, becoming more used around the world. And number two for both Oxford and Collins dictionaries was this word, hygge. It is the most recent export from the land that gave us Vikings, Lego, Danish pastries via Austrian bakers, apparently during the 1850s strike, I found out this week on a funny little excursus. This is Hans Christian Andersen and his stories of the Princess and the Pea and the Emperor's New Clothes. It was the original inspiration for the movie Frozen, so that's who you have to thank for it, Let It Go, and all of those sorts of things. And of course, it's the home of our very own Mary, the Crown Princess of Denmark, as well. Now, hygge is the Danish art of living, and it is partially responsible, or so it's claimed, for the happiness of this small little Nordic nation. 5.7 million people in a territory about two-thirds the size of Tasmania. So in terms of its land size, that's where it sits. It is consistently ranked as one of the happiest places in the world. The UN World Happiness Report of 2016 ranked Denmark number one, along with Switzerland, Iceland, Norway, Finland, Canada, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Australia, and Sweden. And I just want to draw your attention to the correlation between snow and happiness. I don't know what to make of that, but just want to draw your attention to it. The colder you are, the happier you are. Australia is the outlier in this whole area. But they're always kind of deemed one of the happier nations. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that. But hygge has kind of become the hot topic. The definition of hygge, because there's no real direct translation, is kind of summed up in this one. It's a little bit small. Let me read it out for you so you can hear what it has to say. But hygge is the art of building sanctuary and community. of inviting closeness and paying attention to what makes us feel open-hearted and alive. Huga is to create well-being, connection, and warmth. Huga is a feeling of belonging to the moment and to each other, and Huga is celebrating the everyday. If you do any kind of reading in this area, you'll find that Huga is all about home and about family and about identity in relationships and shelter and comfort, especially the comfort that comes through the senses. So what we touch and what we feel and what we smell and what we see and what we taste. Perhaps one of the closest kind of ways to translate it might be around things like that are cozy. But it's not just about coziness, because if it was, it's never going to take off in Australia, because the last thing we need is a blanket and another fire. Although it's nice to have a fire inside the house, not one that's burning the whole landscape down as well. So it's more than that. It's this idea of comfort and shelter and relationships that are so critical. And so all these images are aspects of Huga. You can huga alone, apparently. There's a whole bunch of different words for it, but you can huga alone, as the lady in the top right-hand corner is. She's just sitting there reading a book or whatever she's doing by herself, but it's more often related with friends. There's contrast, kind of close to the fire and away from the fire, the family all kind of rugged up at the foot of the sofa. All these sorts of things are what huga is all about. And I don't know exactly where I bumped into this. There was actually an article in the Sydney Morning Herald on Monday, the 26th of December, that was entitled, Why You Need to Know About Huga, the Danish Lifestyle Craze That's All About Comfort, in which she kind of outlined some of the things that I've just spoken about. I may have actually seen it, though, much earlier. I know that I did. I can't remember the exact article. It might have been the other article from November 16th, which was, We Need a Little More Huga in Our Stressful Lives. But when I began to dig around from this, I found that there were 20 books that were being published or had been published in 2016 on this topic, which suggests that the publishers see a place to make some money. So it's apparently a really big deal in the UK. It's become a really big deal there. I don't know, as I said, if it's ever going to kind of hit Australia, but it's been popping up every so often in the newspaper and other little conversations and articles that I have. So I actually, I purchased the one on the left, not because it was half price, it was just the one that I bought. It's called The Art of Huga, and it is by Louisa Thompson Britz. In which she kind of outlines her philosophy of huga. And I have to say, I don't know whether it was just kind of my Canadian soul longing for something a little bit colder, but I really liked it. There was actually a whole bunch to like about huga. There's a whole bunch that I think we can resonate with, not just as people, but I think as Christians as well. I mean, this definition that she has near the beginning of her book, I think kind of sums up some of these same themes. But to huga is to invite intimacy and connection. It's a feeling of engagement and relatedness, of belonging to the moment and to each other. Huga is a sense of abundance and contentment. It is about being, not having. And there's a whole bunch in that, I think, that we can like, isn't there? I really like that the emphasis on community, that this is not some kind of internalized, personal, self-centered mindfulness where kind of I go off and get cozy by myself and I have this little huga moment or whatever you have, and no one else does. I really like the emphasis on community, on family and friends, on involvement and the inclusivity of that. There's a really strong emphasis on contentment. Britz makes this really interesting point very early in the book where she says, if I am content, then I am no longer chasing after things for myself, and then I am free to care for you. And I thought, that is really interesting. That out of my contentment, if I can find contentment, then I'm actually much better placed to serve you, because I'm no longer looking for my own needs to be filled. I'm no longer looking to kind of do things for myself. I am satisfied, I am fine, I am content, therefore I can serve you. I really like that. I thought that's just a wonderful idea. There's a simplicity about hygge, which I think is quite nice as well. It's not about gathering more things, although you will find this in the homestyle department, and there's lots of wonderful hygge things to purchase, of course, even though it's about being, not having. But nonetheless, please purchase these things, which will help you be if you have these things, right? That's the whole kind of process. But there's a sacredness to the everyday. So a lot of the experiences of hygge that they talk about are very, very simple things about, you know, the family all kind of piling into bed on a Saturday morning. That's an experience of hygge. It's every day, lighting a candle or the fireplace in Denmark or whatnot, having meals together, these moments of community. I think in an Australian context, it might be, you know, huddling under an umbrella on a burning hot beach could be a moment of hygge or whatever it might be. There's an everyday sacredness about it, which I think is really affirming from a Christian worldview. That we see that everything is sacred, that everything has value, that everything, every moment has an aspect of holiness. You know, as Jonathan said when we were chatting about the work in Spain, they're not bringing Jesus to Spain. Jesus is already in Spain. And they're helping people to see him. And that's largely what hygge, I think, is seeking to say, that there is contentment and peace and community and all of those things in the everyday aspects of our lives. You don't have to go someplace else or experience something else. I think it affirms the goodness of food and drink and soft fabrics and comfort and warmth, the things that we can experience. And I think as Christians, we would affirm and agree that there's a goodness to creation. There's a responsibility for other people. Again, something that I really like. This idea that if I invite you and we are going to hygge together, or whatever we do together, it still seems weird. I've been practicing all week, it still sounds weird. Right? The whole idea, if we're going to have this moment together, then I need to take some responsibility for you. I don't want to kind of force you to engage in conversation if you don't want to, but I want to make sure that I am giving you the opportunity to. I'm taking responsibility for our experience together, that if we're going to have a really good conversation, I can't wait for you to come up with the conversation topics. I might have to actually take some responsibility for that. I really like that idea. I think so often we want community to happen to us, but we don't actually take responsibility to make sure that other people can experience community. It's a really interesting tension. So all the way through this, there's a whole bunch that I really quite liked. And, you know, when I reflected a bit on what Sue read for us out of Ecclesiastes chapter 5, I saw some correlations. I think the teacher would have affirmed a whole bunch of the hygge that he might have encountered if he ever managed to get to Denmark. Right? This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for people to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives people wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot, and be happy with their toil, this is a gift from God. Now, you can see some differences already between perhaps what he says and what I've read, and I think that the teacher is probably a little bit more pessimistic than Louisa Thompson Britz is about the wonderful experiences of community. Notice his references to toilsome labor in the few days that they have under the sun. He's not a big fan as you read the book through. But this idea that there is something inherently good about sharing food and drink and sharing our wealth and our possessions with each other, I think is something that we can affirm. And I don't know about you, but can you imagine a Danish Jesus? Because I read this book and I thought, there's a whole bunch in this that I think really resonates with Jesus. I mean, what did Jesus spend most of his time doing? According to the Gospels, he spent most of his time eating and drinking with people. I mean, he never used the word hygge. It's Danish, not Greek. But like, it sounds like Jesus would have gone, that sounds all right. All of his parables. I mean, notice that Jesus never opened his parables with in a galaxy far, far away, right? He doesn't tell science fiction stories. He tells stories about a man with two sons and a farmer sowing some seed and a widow who's lost a coin and is sweeping up and a shepherd who's lost a sheep. Just really regular, ordinary, everyday components. There's a sense of community that grows around Jesus, isn't there? People gather together and experiencing something a little bit different, something that is comfortable and something that is at peace. And so I think that, you know, when we begin to think about something like this, and this is not, I'm not advocating that we all go and purchase a book and get a big, cozy rug and stuff. If you want a hygge, knock yourself out. But it's more about saying, so what do we do with this? How do we engage with this? Because while there's things that we can affirm, there's also some things that when I finished the book in particular, I thought, I'm not so certain that this is the all-encompassing philosophy that they would like it to be. So for instance, there is no reference to God. So in Ecclesiastes, even though the teacher is quite sarcastic and pessimistic about the ability to actually enjoy much of life because we're all going to die anyway, so what's the point? That's the essence of Ecclesiastes, by the way. Right? But apart from that, he does affirm that good food and good drink and the ability to enjoy them comes from God. According to the book that I read on the art of hygge, hygge just happens. There's no real spirituality to it. There's no religion to it. There's no sense that God is involved in any sort of way. And as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, I think I would want to say, well, I would see Jesus in there somewhere. I would see Jesus somewhere in there. I think that's one thing. I think there's also a certain lightheartedness to hygge. As I read through the book, there was a couple of places where the author said, we try to steer away from contentious issues. We want to have kind of lighthearted conversation. I thought, that sounds like fun, but what happens if there's suffering? I mean, can you hygge in Syria? Is it possible? Is it even possible? Or do you have to be kind of a comfortable upper middle class Western European or the like? I thought, if that's the case, I'm a little uncomfortable with that. It doesn't seem to have any sort of scope for disagreements and the things that make relationships really strong. And I thought that seems a little bit light on. And it's also, I think, runs the risk of exclusivity. So if I'm focused on my family and my friends, then who do I invite to things? Well, I invite my family and my friends. So how do I gain new friends? If someone who is different from my family or my friends is somehow brought into this scope, what do I do with them? Is there any room for the refugee to be invited to hygge in a new community, in a new situation? And these are some of the questions that I was left with, thinking, so where is God in this? Where is the place for discussion about and the interaction with difficult topics? How do you suffer in this kind of art of living well? Because suffering and death are part of our life. And how do we deal with that? And so there seem to be some gaps in it. And again, as I said, this is not an endorsement of hygge. If you want to adopt it, knock yourself out. But I wonder if you won't bump into some people who have. I wonder if you won't go into someone's house this year, one of your friends, and see a candle lit in the middle of the day. And I wonder if you won't have the opportunity, you know, you all have a trendy friend, right? You might be the trendy friend if you're really lucky, but we all have a trendy friend or a really trendy family member, and they're probably right into hygge already. So what do we do with it? How do we engage with this as followers of Jesus? Because I think that's the kind of the critical piece. And there's two things I think that we need to engage with. On the one hand, I think we need to affirm what we can. In any cultural issue, in any event, in any topic, in any thing that pops up in culture, one of the questions that we must become better at answering as Christians is what can we affirm? Because so often as Christians, we take a negative stance to things, don't we? And maybe it's just me. But if something happens and we immediately kind of remonstrate and shake our finger and say, well, that's not biblical or that's not theological or that's not whatever. And that may be true. But what in it can we affirm? And so I think it's really important if your friend or your sister or your brother-in-law or whatever kind of adopts some of this stuff to affirm that, you know, I really love the idea of community as it's described in these texts on hygge. That sounds fantastic. There's a whole bunch of stuff about the contentment and generosity and simplicity that I think we really need to hear in our day and age. Those things can be affirmed. I think there's something we can affirm of the experience of the good things of life. I think that's all worth affirming. But when it comes to the questions that we might have about something, I think we need to, instead of condemning, we need to learn to ask questions. We need to ask the questions. We need to ask questions about, so if contentment leads me to be able to serve you more effectively, how do I get that? Like, really, how do I find contentment? Is it self-generated? Really? Is that how I'm going to figure this one out? How do we talk about suffering? What if someone's going through a really hard time? Is there any space for them to have that conversation? How do we include people in it? Not in a condemning tone, but simply to ask the questions to get people to think and therefore to, as Shane and Ruth talked about a couple of weeks ago, live our faith out loud. To let people know that this is how we think about this as followers of Jesus, which I think is quite critical for us. But I think one of the most important questions to ask of any kind of event, any issue, any topic, is why this and why now? What struck me is, why is hygge such a big deal? Apparently, it's been around Danish society for centuries. It's a fundamental part of the fabric of their life. Why now? Why now? I don't think you have to think very hard to figure it out, really. We live in uncertain times, don't we? Oh, we've always lived in uncertain times. We've never known what the future will hold. That's the whole point, right? But 2017, it's really uncertain, isn't it? What is Donald Trump going to do? And what is the Russian and Chinese posturing going to mean for the political situation in our world, and particularly for us in the Asian Pacific region of the world? Now, there's economic uncertainty on top of all the regular uncertainty of our own lives about, you know, is my job going to last, and how are my kids going to do, and are my grandchildren okay, and all those sorts of things that we normally have to grapple with. But in a time when our world is experiencing uncertainty, it's not that surprising that up pops this little philosophy that basically says, don't talk about the big things. Just kind of gather your friends and family in your house, light a candle, have something to eat, and just enjoy the moment. Makes sense, doesn't it? It's the perfect way in uncertain times. That's one of the reasons why I think we sometimes end up looking at Facebook or Instagram or whatever it might be instead of the news, because the news is just so depressing. And at least I can look and go, oh, wow, what a lovely dinner that they had at that restaurant they took a photo of. Oh, like that. Oh, whew, so much more relaxing. We retreat, don't we? When there are uncertain times, when there are fears that we hold about the future, we tend to withdraw. I mean, it's one of the things we're seeing in politics, isn't it? Uncertain times, and what is the response of one form of extremism? Withdraw. And so in the midst of this uncertain world, this seems to be the core of it. Hygge pops up as a way for us to cope with uncertain times. And this ultimately, I think, is where we end up, I think, kind of from a Christian perspective, needing to kind of shift things a bit. While we can affirm community, while we can affirm good meals and good friends and all of those sorts of things, when it comes to the language of being anchored or finding shelter or contentment or the pleasures of home, as believers, we believe that that stuff doesn't just come from a candle in a jar or a really nice meal. As Ryan led us in worship at the start of our service, we believe that true peace comes from Jesus. And that the peace and security that we really long for is not in retreat, is not in kind of closing things off, is not in finding our family and friends and doing the things that we like and make us feel comfortable and safe. But in Jesus, the peace that he gives us actually allows us to open ourselves up and to serve other people and to take responsibility for the widow and the foreigner and the alien and the orphan. It allows us to serve those around us without fear, but with a true, deep sense of peace. And in a world of unsettled seas, hygge ultimately isn't the answer, as nice as it might be. Jesus continues to be our source of peace and security. So hygge away, if you would like. But ultimately, let us learn to be followers of Jesus in this. Let us seek to identify what can be affirmed and what perhaps needs to be restored and renewed. And let us seek to be those who find our peace and security in the Lord. Next week, we're going to look at post-truth. But before we get there, I'm going to get them to turn the air conditioning back on. And let's have a little bit of cool hygge for a moment. And as Mark said, we want to take an opportunity. We have some more time than we might normally have. There's no kids program that's waiting to finish up and kind of running another game for 15 or 20 minutes while we finish up. There's no second service that's kind of bumping up against us. We have a little bit of time. And so what we would like to do this morning is to take a little bit more time than we might normally as we take some time to pray. So if you're visiting with us, as Mark said, last year, about this time, for the first time, we offered prayer kind of in our service, not after our service. And we had a really wonderful time of praying with one another and ministering with one another last year, and we've continued that all year, and I think that's borne some fruit in our community here. But in a moment, I'm going to invite the worship team up. We're going to sing a couple of songs to conclude our time together, and I'm going to invite the prayer team, it'll be Mark and Nicolie, and myself and Jodine. We're just going to be down the front here. And can I encourage you, if you would like a blessing on this new year, why don't you come down? Whether you feel particularly uncertain or restless, it's kind of beside the point. Why don't you come down, bring your family, bring your friends, bring your husband, your wife. Let us pray a blessing on you, that you might experience the peace and the hope and the security that comes from Jesus this year. We've got a little bit of time. We're family here. So let's hygge together as we pray, and let's have community together. Let's pray with one another, and let's minister to each other. If you're more comfortable praying with the people around you, do that as well. You don't have to be up the front to be able to pray. If there are people around you who you feel really comfortable with, why don't you just take a moment in these couple of songs to pray for one another, but let's take some time together as we respond. So will you stand? Allow me to lead us in prayer, and then I'll hand over to Ryan and our prayer team.